Hi, this is Jenny Chamberlain, and welcome to my Southern Utah Housing Podcast. This season, we're talking about attainable housing.
Today, I'm really excited. Julie Lindquist of Self Help Homes consented to allow me to interview her. And so we're going to get started. I was interested in Self Help Homes because I've seen a couple of their neighborhoods that have been done. I live in Tokerville, and I know you did a neighborhood over there. And then I've also been noticing some on 600 North, so maybe we can hear a little bit about that later. But to start out, Julie, I'd like to have you tell me a little bit about yourself, how you came to work for Self Help Homes, and maybe a little bit of your background, if that's okay.
Sure. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you doing this. It's an important subject. So my name's Julie. I've been in this area for 30 years. I worked as a technical writer for a software company for a long time, and then that kind of petered out, and I worked at the St. George News for a while. And while I was at the St. George News, I did a few stories about self-help homes, and I just thought it was such a fascinating concept and a cool program, and I liked the people that I met through those stories. And so eventually I talked the executive director into hiring me, and I've been here ever since. That was 5 years ago.
That's great. Who is the executive director?
His name is Brad Bishop.
Okay. And is he like a contractor or just a manager? Or?
No, he's a manager. Mm-hmm. For this project, for this program, the USDA holds the general contractor's license.
Okay.
All the loans are through the USDA. Mm-hmm. We have construction supervisors that help each individual, each group with their project. So.
Okay. So next I'll ask you to tell me a little bit about self-help homes, which you kind of have started sharing. What kind of organization is it? Where did it start? Is it a local? Does it have federal ties? What exactly is it?
We're a nonprofit.
Okay.
We're based in Provo, Utah. Mm-hmm. We have a main office up there. It started in 1998, and so we are a grantee organization. We get grants from the USDA to run this program. So that means that all the money that the families borrow from the USDA go to the cost of their home. There's no overhead. We don't need to make a profit on the homes. We can't make any money on the homes. Mm-hmm. So we're authorized by USDA to operate in certain counties in Utah. Right now we've got Wasatch County, Utah County, Washington County, and a limited number of homes in Juab County in Nephi. There are other organizations across the country that do the same thing. It's the same program. It's called the Mutual Self-Help Housing Program.
Okay.
For Southern Utah, this program was here years and years ago, probably 20 years ago, but it was run by an organization called Color Country. I'm not exactly sure what happened there, but the program passed to Five County Association of Governments for a while, a couple of years, I think, and they didn't really want it. They've got plenty of other things to do, and so we took it over, I think, about 6 or 7 years ago. And they were happy to get rid of it, and we already had a good track record with homes in northern Utah. So far we've built, it's close to 600 homes in Utah.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
We're on group number 75. Well, we've got a few more planned for after that, but yeah.
So how does the program work? When you say a group, what does that mean, and how do things go?
So basically what we do as the grantee is we pre-screen families. We maintain waiting lists. So the pre-screen process is a pre-application on our website, and that just gives us a lot of basic information about the family, income, credit, debt, et cetera. And if a family looks like they'll qualify, we'll put them on the waiting list. And then when we get to them on the list, we gather a group of families together. It's usually 8 to 10. Mm-hmm. And they all work together on their homes. Everybody works on everybody's home. Nobody gets to move in until they're all finished. So my part of the process is doing the pre-screening process, and then when we put a group together, I help the families do their full applications for the USDA. Basically, we package them up and submit them on behalf of the USDA. Then we help with the appraisal process, and then we help do the paperwork to get set up for closing. After closing, Within a couple, 2 or 3 weeks usually of closing, the families will start framing on their homes.
So you help them get the construction loans initially, and then is that the same loan that'll be on their permanent residence, or do they have to get another loan at the end when it closes?
After they're finished building and they move in, or right about when they move in, the loan will roll over to a regular mortgage through the USDA, but they will be able to maintain, it's still their loan. They won't, there's no chance of losing it at that point. But there are subsidies that the families get. And so what they'll do is USDA will check their income and debt ratio at that time, and there's a possibility of adjusting those subsidies either up or down if their income has gone up or down.
Okay.
But once they close on that loan, the loan is theirs, and they do that before they start building.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Did I interrupt and miss anything else about the process and how the program works?
Well, I was just going to explain that this is a sweat equity program, so the homeowners do about 70% of the labor on the houses. They don't do anything that requires a license. We hire subcontractors for that. But that the work commitment is 35 hours a week per family.
And for how long is it? Just until it's done? Is it different every...
Yeah.
Depending on the plans and things?
Until it's done. Generally, it's 8 to 10 months.
Okay. That's a lot of hours.
So that's like 1,100 hours at the minimum for each family.
Wow.
It's a lot of work. It's a tough, tough thing to do.
Can their kids help?
No. If they're 16, they can help clean up. If they're 18, they can run power tools. But for safety reasons, the children can't be on the site.
Okay. That makes sense. So if somebody wants to build a self-help home, how do they get involved? It sounds like there's an application on your website.
So the first thing to do would be to look at the information on the website. Contact me or the Provo office if you have specific questions. But if everything looks like you might qualify, then you would fill out a pre-application. Once I get that, I crunch all the numbers and I can let the families know where they stand. If there's things they need to do to qualify, I can let them know that. If it looks good, then they can get on the waiting list and go from there.
Okay. Is it hard to qualify? Do you kind of know off the top of your head what the income requirements are right now? Does it change from year to year?
It does.
Okay.
The prices of everything have been going up, so the cost of homes have been going up. So there's a minimum and a maximum. I can tell you in a minute what the exact income requirements are. But generally, it's low to very low-income people. Now, in my mind, that's according to the USDA. In my mind, it's more like low to moderate income.
It's probably talking about stuff like the percentages of the median income when we're talking about low to very low. Okay.
I think it's 80% of the median income or less.
Okay. So what are some of your latest projects that Self-Help Homes has worked on or that are in the works?
Well, we just basically do the same thing over and over again. We just do group after group after group. The development for the second half of the Hurricane Heights property has been delayed for quite a while. So while that was going on, I've been doing Nephi groups. I did two groups for Nephi.
Okay. How come the hurricane one's delayed?
It's just trouble getting qualified subcontractors to get there on time and do their thing.
Oh, okay.
So right now they're almost finished with the gas line, and after that it's pretty smooth sailing.
So you're having trouble with the actual development side is slowing it down. Is that right?
Just
like
the on this particular
putting the roads in and stuff?
No, the roads are easy. Apparently it's the gas lines and utility lines that have been a problem this time.
Okay.
I don't really handle that part of it, and I haven't seen a delay like this before. And once we get past this, we'll be fine. We've got room for two groups in Hurricane, and after that, we'll have more property, and I'm not sure exactly where that will be, though.
Cool. Do you have any inspiring stories of how Self-Help Homes has helped individuals and families that you can share?
Well, there's just been so many. You know, every family just works really hard once they get started building. A lot of them have to work hard before they even get to that point just to get qualified. So I've had people on the list for 3 to 4 years, well, not even on the list, working towards getting on the list for 3 to 4 years.
Oh, wow. Do you know what, like, an average wait time is once they do get on the list before a project will work out for them?
Down here, it's estimated about 12 months.
Oh, that's not too bad.
It's not bad here. If they're high-priority families, which means very low income according to USDA guidelines, it could be even less. I do know, though, in Wasatch County and Utah County, the waiting lists are closed unless you're a high-priority family.
Oh, wow.
Because they're already 2 years long.
And their demand's probably super high up there with the higher population.
They just have a huge population, yeah.
Yeah, that's hard.
Yeah, families work hard before they even start. I gotta say, though, they're all just thrilled when they get done.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, each group has, they're all excited at start, and then there's a little bit of a lag in the middle.
When they have to do all that hard work, and there's still a lot more to do.
And it takes so much time, and, you know, people have lives and jobs and families, and also, but then they get closer and closer to the finish line, and then by the time they're done, they're just tickled pink.
Ecstatic, I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a friend in one of the ones in Tocqueville, and she said, I just don't know if we could ever do that again, because it was so hard, and they're, you know, they had little kids, and, but.
It's a big sacrifice.
It's a beautiful home that they built, and I'm really happy for them. I'm happy that they moved close to me, because I like having a friend by me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've had single parents, single dads, single moms.
Mm-hmm.
We've had big families, little families, individuals. You don't have to have more than one person to do this program. We had one family that is actually from the Congo.
Wow.
They moved, not here, but up in northern Utah. They moved here to the U.S. in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
The father had to come first and work and earn money to bring the rest of his family. Mm-hmm. He had a wife and 3 children. They finally got here. They heard about the program and signed up, and they finally got to build last year. And they're just tickled.
That's great. And was that here in southern Utah?
That was in northern Utah.
Maybe northern Utah. Cool.
Well, Utah County.
Cool. And so you've been doing a couple in Nephi while we wait for the hurricane one.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything coming up after the hurricane one, or that you still, how do you identify like property to do it on? Do they do it out of the state trust lands, or do they just have to buy it on the open market?
No, we have to buy the property.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a man in the Provo office that's his entire job, development.
Mm-hmm.
So he finds properties and purchases properties and gets all the permits and everything that everybody needs. And I'm not really involved in that, so.
Okay, cool. Well, that's all the questions I initially had. Are there any other questions that I haven't asked you about self-help homes that I should have asked?
Not that I can think of offhand.
Okay.
You were going to ask, you were planning to ask about the affordable housing space, what I think should be done in that area.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
But, and that's a tough one. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's a serious problem here right now,
mm-hmm.
for many, many people. Not just, I mean, people are unable to even buy a house, and they're having trouble renting as well because the rents have gone up so much.
Yeah.
Personally, I think part of the solution to that is building more higher density housing.
Yeah.
And I've asked my boss about this a couple of times, building duplexes or fourplexes. And he said that we've done that in the past, but it's super hard to find property where the zoning will allow that.
Mm-hmm.
And as you probably know, a lot of people with single family homes don't want high density developments in their area.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it hard for city council people to pass zoning to permit that. But
yeah,
it's like the people that already have houses aren't considering the needs that they don't understand how hard it is for the average Joe around here.
Yeah.
I mean, wages have gone up, but rents have gone up way faster, and property has gone up
for sure.
Faster, and houses have gone up faster.
Way faster. Yeah. And I'm really excited, actually, because I'm hoping to get a guest on that I was talking to them before about that, about the zoning issue. And I think that is one of the big solutions. So hopefully that'll be in my next episode or one of the next upcoming ones to talk more about that. Because It is a huge issue. I've seen that a lot. I have been volunteering on the Tokerville Planning Commission just to kind of listen to what people say. And I just hear everybody there is like, I moved here because it's rural and I love it just the way it is and I don't want it to change. And I can understand that. But I also, one of the reasons I kind of volunteered is because I want the perspective of a young parent who says, look, I've got a daughter that's a senior in high school right now, and there is no way that she can get a job in our county and buy a house, a single family residence. And because of the hard time we give everybody about zoning, it's not going to happen for her unless we have a sea change of minds. So,
yeah, that's very true. That's a lot of what I saw when I was a reporter.
Uh-huh.
And there were a few planning commission meetings I went to, and then, you know, the follow-up at the city council. And it's just hard for regular people here.
It is really hard for people who work here. And I think, too, because I work in the real estate space, and so many of the people who move here, because we have a lot of net in migration. Like, people are moving here because it's a great place to live.
Yes,
and
yes.
Many of them are more mature, and they've had time to build up equity in their existing homes, and then mm-hmm. they can just come and buy one in cash. I think more than half of the properties that sell in our county are bought with cash.
Still.
I mean, a surprisingly high number. I don't know what the current data is. I heard that a couple of years ago, but it's always surprising to me just how many people can just pay cash for a house when, you know, most people, when you first get into that space, it takes you a while to save up mm-hmm. and get in, and then if you're lucky, you can stay in a home, but I think I'm kind of wandering off track, but
no,
do you have any other affordable housing ideas, or is that?
It's, you know, I think the city councils and the county commission need to do more. They do a lot of, I wouldn't say subsidizing for businesses, but for big business developments, they will negotiate with them to get them in. And they will write off their taxes for so many mm-hmm. years, and I don't understand why they can't do that for people that are willing to build affordable housing.
Yeah, it's a good point. Well, thank you so much for being on my podcast today. I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy day.
You're very welcome, and thanks for coming.
After Julie and I spoke, she sent me some information about the organization that I thought my listeners would appreciate hearing about as well. Self-Help Homes is part of a larger organization called the Mutual Self-Help Program that's through the federal government. And there are actually quite a few self-help home organizations in Utah. Over the course of the program, they have built 2,101 homes in our state over the past, I think, 20 or more years. And there are 9 different organizations like that across Utah. And the one that Julie works for is called Self-Help Homes, and they work in Washington County as well as Utah and Wasatch counties. So the Self-Help Homes organization she works with has built 601 of those homes since the year 2000, including 45 in the Hurricane Valley, which includes Tokerville, Hurricane, and Lewerken. And so they have made a huge difference in the lives of many, many people. I mean, 45 homes is a big chunk, and I am really excited. I think it's really awesome that they're doing that. At the time of this podcast in 2023, this year alone, with all of these groups, there are 153 homes in production. And to give you a feel for the income of the people that are in these programs, and that the programs are there to help, in 2019, the income limits were $35,550 for the very low income limits and $56,900 a year for the low income limits. And then by 2023, those limits had gone up because the median income in the areas have gone up, and the lower one was $43,700 a year the very low category, and then in the low category it was $69,900. And so over the course of those 4 years, the percentage of households needing a full subsidy from the program went up from 68% of households who applied to 100% of them. And as many people who have been paying attention to the real estate market will know, housing prices jumped dramatically in 2020, 2021, and 2022 in Utah. And with interest rates rising, they did finally start to slow down and calm down a little bit in 2022. But in some of the more populated counties than ours, the waiting lists for the self-help home programs have closed because the demand is so high, and it can take a really long time to get on one. So the loans on these homes, if we're looking at what they cost, in 2019, they were around $233,571 on average. And they were paying like 3.5% interest, but it has jumped since then. And now in 2023, the loans on average, they have to pay 4% interest, and the loan amount on average is $391,796. So you can see why more people are needing to take advantage of the full subsidy amount. And for reference, I checked the July data on sold homes in the Washington County on our local MLS, which I have access to, and the median home price was $508,500, which is actually down from July of 2022, when it was $550,000. But still, it's very, very high in relation to what the members of our community who work here are able to pay for housing. And these numbers are also having an impact on rents, because if people can't afford to buy, then their only other option is renting. And so that has caused inflation to hit our rentals as well. And they just keep going up. I wanted to talk to someone to get a firsthand account of what the self-help homes program felt like from a perspective of a person who built the home. So I contacted my friend Adele and her husband Josh, because they built one and finished it a couple of years ago. And I just wanted to know how it went for them. So I'm really excited to interview them today for the next segment of today's episode. Thank you both for consenting to be on my podcast.
My name is Joshua Kirkman.
And my name is Adele Kirkman.
And I was interested in interviewing Adele and Josh because Adele is one of my friends from graduate school. And while we were in school, she was expecting her fourth baby. And they were moving while she was pregnant. And it turns out that the house they moved into was one that's associated with the program that I just interviewed Julie Lindquist about, which is self-help homes. So I just wanted to ask you guys how that experience was. How did you first hear about self-help homes?
Well, we actually learned about the program from one of my mission companions, one of my friends that I spent time with out in Chicago. And this is when we lived up in Salt Lake. So they have the program up there in Heber City as well.
But they had a long waiting list. And because the waiting list was long, we still hadn't come to our turn yet to begin building in Heber City. Mm-hmm. And when Josh switched companies, worked for a different architecture firm, and we moved down here, we found out that Tokerville had a self-help homes program as well. So mm-hmm. we hopped on their waiting list, and it was much shorter.
Did you have to like start from the end of the list when you got on the different list when you came down here?
I think so, but we're not completely sure.
I had the impression from Julie, too, that it is more like the demand is higher just because in northern Utah, because there's a higher population base up there.
Mm-hmm. Like they had in Heber City, they had like 3 or 4 groups going at the same time. Where down here, they mm-hmm. only have like 1 group going at once.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And she said some of the waiting lists up there are now closed because they're just full. We're lucky down here to have at least a little bit of room on it, I think.
Yeah, sure.
When we first got on lists up there, we were like number 80 or something on the mm-hmm. waiting list. It was huge.
So that's a long time to probably wait through. Yeah.
Yeah, we waited a couple of years, I think, while we were up there.
Once you got through the waiting list, what can you tell me about the process? Like, what was it like to do a self-help home?
It was a lot of paperwork. We were very eager to get started, but it was like when our turn came up, you know, you have to be able to prove your income. And unfortunately, since we had just moved and our names actually came up like within a month of us moving to St. George, unfortunately, we didn't have 2 pay stubs to show as proof. So just that one little thing equaled us waiting another year before we could get started.
Oh, shoot.
But it was okay. I mean, we needed that adjustment time before we hopped right into building.
Mm-hmm. So when you first moved down here, were you... That was on the list down here.
Yes.
The timing was just didn't turn out right. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I just switched jobs from a different company.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have
pay periods
with my current company.
Oh, man.
So, yeah.
So that cost you a year. And then, so during that year, did you have to do a lot more paperwork, or like you did it at that point, and then a year later, you were ready to build? Like, how did it go?
No, you fill out an initial paperwork to get on the waiting list.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, when they get closer, you start filling out more paperwork And it's been long enough that I can't remember exactly what we had to fill out in the process. But, you know, paperwork for the loans through USDA. And so we had to fill out paperwork for that, for loan information. And then also paperwork for saying that we were committed to the program, putting in the hours, helping each other build each other's houses, picking out house plans and finishes. And we did all that before we actually started building.
Mm-hmm. And did you know anybody else who was in your, what is the group called, like a cohort or just a team?
We just kind of named ourselves, I guess, the Peachtree Circle group. And we didn't know anybody in the group. They just kind of pull together whoever comes up on the list and whoever fits into certain income brackets. They have different ones. They like to have a variety of families.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of nice to meet new people. And yeah.
Were there any other requirements in addition to the, like, the weekly hours that you had to do? Or was that, like, the main big thing?
So there was the weekly hours, but then you were required to be there on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's when the supervisor was there, and he would do the training Saturday mornings. So if you weren't there, you kind of were lost throughout
for the week.
I mean, he would be there throughout the week, but I mean, people would be there at different times, and you were required to be there at a certain time on Saturday. So we were all working together. We all kind of knew what we needed to do for the next week.
How did it go with the hours? Did both of you do them, or did just one of you do them all the time? Did you recruit friends?
It was kind of a, honestly, we owe our home to my family. I had a sister that would come down who, luckily, during COVID, they were doing homeschool. And so she would come down and she would watch my kids all day Saturday. And she was, I think, 16 at the time. And then I would go out with Josh and I would spend the whole day, and we could both count both of our hours for that mm-hmm. Saturday. Or what happened most of the time, because I was expecting our fourth baby at that time, what would happen a lot of times is that my dad would drive the 2 hours down here, and he would just stay for Saturday, work all day, and then drive the 2 hours home. And he did that, and my brother did that now and then, but my dad did a lot of it, a lot of driving, and we were very grateful to him for that, because honestly, when we found out that it would require 35 hours a week, we just kind of were counting on Josh being totally wiped out and exhausted and just living a really hard life during that build time. But luckily, my family stepped in ways that we didn't know they were going to. So mm-hmm. we were very grateful to them. Everyone else in the program had family that lived near. And so they would just come on weeknights or some Saturdays. And we were the only ones that didn't have anybody in the area.
Mm-hmm. It's probably hard too, where you were from Northern Utah and you didn't even have like a social circle in Tokerville established already that your friends could come and help you. Because I know you and like you now, and I would have at least done a few hours for you, but that would be really challenging.
And that actually, now that I think about it, that was another requirement. So the homeowners actually had to get in is at least half of the hours or a little more.
Okay.
So it couldn't be all volunteers getting in your hours for mm-hmm. you. So you were required to get in so many hours.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was talking to one of my friends who, it's just her and her partner. And I thought, oh, well, if it's just two of you, you could, because I was doing the math. So if it's 35 hours, that's 17 and a half hours a week for two people. So if you just went for 8 hours on Saturday and then 2 hours after work every day on the weekdays, you could still have one weekend day. But I thought, if you're a mom, like, and you have four kids that you're, or three, you know, you have, that's a really hard challenge to get that time in. And especially if you were expecting, it would be challenging. But so how long did it take from start to finish to build the homes?
I think it took about 9 months to build all the homes. It's like,
I think it was like more like 10 or 11. Like from start to actually moving in.
So we moved in, let's see, we started like in June, I think. And we moved in May. So yeah, maybe 10 months, 9 to 10 months. But we built that in that time. We had, how many families did we have? Did we have seven in our group?
I think we had seven.
Yeah.
Oh, now I have to count.
So we built six or seven houses in that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
All at the same time.
That's amazing. That's like a lot of houses to build all together. Do you have any cool stories from when you were building your house, or was it just a lot of work? My grandpa was a shop teacher, and so
while they were building their house, my dad fell off the stairs and hit his head really hard and was the bad news.
That's awful.
But he lived, and so it was like a miracle, and my dad will tell us that cool story, like, look, and I'm fine.
I don't have any cool stories. I mean, it's kind of a shame that the first week we were out, the nicest guy in the whole group was the one to shoot a guy in the hand with a nail gun when they were framing. So that was the only big traumatic thing that I can remember.
Was that the first week on the site, you say?
It was the first week. The first day, I think.
And it happened to the nicest guy.
It happened to the nicest guy. That's a shame. Yeah.
Oh, man. Did you already know he was a nice guy? Or did he just spend the rest of the build making up for that?
We found out he was a really nice guy.
Uh-huh. That's funny.
I did think that it was cool that, like, in our group, we had, I think everyone except for, there was one person that didn't have a partner. And then one person had a partner off and on. But the other five families, there was a husband and wife situation where, mm-hmm. like, you could count on one of them being there. But I was very surprised and really admire these women that what they would do is, since their husbands had been at work all day, there was, like, three or four women in the group that every night they would come out from, you know, 7 to 10 and work on the houses. And so it kind of, I guess, defied your stereotypical building situation, because they got to be to where if we had something difficult with one of the houses, we would say, oh, go get so-and-so, this lady, or go get this other lady. Because not to downplay what their husbands did at all on Saturdays, but they were the ones who knew how to build and how to put something together, and they were very proficient. And so even though I wasn't a part of this group of women, it was very impressive to me that they took initiative, because their husbands were working jobs with odd hours. They took initiatives to go out there and put in the time and learn the building concepts. So I really admired them.
And I could see that being a benefit to your whole group, to have a variety of life circumstances and types of people working on your house, because if it is like the same person every day, I remember when my kids were in an immersion program and they were talking about, well, is the teacher going to move up with them? And they said no, because if they have a different teacher every year, they benefit from what one person knows and what may be a weakness for somebody else. Somebody else might be a strength. And I think it seems like in a group like yours, you have a pretty wide variety of people who aren't usually working in construction. So maybe you'd get somebody with unusual detail orientation or unusual different skills. So that's cool.
Yeah. And it was nice too, because there's some people were better at some tasks than others. Mm-hmm. Or like there are some tasks like that I completely hate doing, but there's other people who love doing it. I was like, good, you can do that task. I'll do these other tasks. So it worked out good.
Josh actually became kind of, he wouldn't admit it, but he was kind of a reference, since it's what he does for work is looks at plans and enjoys.
Oh yeah, an architect.
Yeah. So it was kind of a neat experience for him to actually get to build something instead of just doing the preliminary work.
Has it helped you at work with your work as an architect to have built the houses now? Or?
Yeah, for sure. Because I better understand how things go together. I mean, it's the same when I go out on a job site, like for a project. I learn as I go out there. So it makes it so I kind of know a little more what the contractor's thinking or how they do things. So it makes it better when I'm working on my documents.
Well, is there anything else that I should share with my listeners about the Self-Help Homes program?
You get to know your neighbors too well.
Better than you even wanted to, huh?
Yeah, but it was kind of neat how we had to be together on Saturdays. It didn't happen every Saturday, but sometimes we'd bring donuts or make it like a potluck lunch and have like a little lunch together on Saturday. So that was kind of neat. But I mean, it was a good program. We learned a lot. We worked hard. Would we do it again?
I remember asking Adele that before, and she's like, I don't know if we could do that again. But I think I wouldn't be surprised if, like, it depends on your phase of life, because little kid time is hard. It's super intensive as far as your kids need you when they're little. But if you had had some 16 to 18-year-old kids helping you, that might have been transformed your experience to have four almost adults
Yeah.
Putting in some of the hours.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, I think that I would really recommend the program to someone that either they have family living nearby who can watch their children, mm-hmm. or they have family that can come out to the work site and contribute to their hours. Because, I mean, we were very blessed and we're very thankful for those people in my family that were able to help us put in our hours, because otherwise, I don't know what we would have done. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not a program for people who are completely solo in the world. And, you know, it, in a way, it was kind of humbling to have to ask family members to help us in ways that we hadn't before. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was a learning experience having to appreciate the help and not be quite as prideful as we were before about getting help.
I love it because I think I'm the same way as you, and I think it's an American thing, is we all love to be super independent, mm-hmm. do things ourselves, be self-sufficient. But that's, I think it's one of the wonderful things about the program, because I bet your family, like maybe what they weren't jumping out of bed with a smile on their face every day, but I bet that they loved, I bet they had so much satisfaction in helping you guys. And I bet that they just loved being able to help you that way, because I know I would be happy to help my family that way. And I love it when they ask for help, and nobody ever does ask for help, because we are all so independent.
That's true.
But I think alongside getting to know your neighbors really well, I think that everyone, it helped them build, not especially a lot of people didn't have never done construction before, but it helped build your confidence, like in doing a new task. Like our group specifically, only our main levels were finished. So like our upstairs is all unfinished. Mm-hmm. And we were able to learn enough that we're able to, on our own time after the build, go and work on our upstairs and finish our upstairs, or do even projects outside, because we've learned new trades and new tasks.
That's cool. That's like a side benefit I wouldn't have even thought about, to have all those extra skills. And I think sometimes I'm really lucky to be married to my husband. I call him a capable man. Mm-hmm. Because he has a little bit of native self-confidence, and he'll sometimes be like, no, I can YouTube this. And sometimes, like, I don't want you to YouTube it. I want to just pay somebody to do it, so it's not a headache for you, and it's not a stressful thing, and it's not a time-taking thing. But that confidence is, it's helped us a ton, because there's been lots of times in our marriage where we didn't have money to pay anybody to do it. And since he had, he was like, okay, I'll just try and figure this out. That's a cool side benefit of the program, which I wouldn't have thought of. So I appreciate you sharing that. How do you like your home?
How do you like it?
I love our home. This is the first home that we have owned, and it's the first house that we've lived in 13 years of marriage. And mm-hmm. I think that coming from apartments and townhomes and fourplexes and duplexes and basements, it feels so good to be in an actual home. And I've talked with Josh about this before, but I'm like, you know, I don't know that we could ever pick up and move, because I've just, every time I look around at the walls and just the doors, just everything about our home, it just brings me a lot of happiness to know that my husband, my dad, my neighbors, they all put this together. And so mm-hmm. it brings a lot of satisfaction. I'm very happy with our home. You know, we might not have had quite the choice variety that someone did who did like a custom home that a company built, but really we got a fair amount of choices, and we're happy with what we were able to choose. So
what I was also going to say is, and you probably got this from talking to Julie, one of the other requirements to doing the program is you can own a home. And they said that a lot of people who do the self-help home program, a lot of them are still in their homes, like even years later, because of the effort and the time that they've had to put into it. Adele was saying how we didn't have as many choices as a custom home, but for the home that we got into, something comparable that was already out in the real estate would have been something from the 80s, run down, a lot older finishes,
yeah.
worn out, and we got into something completely brand new, up to date. I don't know if they tell you about this, about the program. the houses are Energy Star certified. So all the appliances are Energy Star, a lot of the light fixtures, like the amount of it, like the insulation that they put in the walls. So it's supposed to be a super efficient home, which compared to apartments we've lived in, even in St. George, like the bills are really cheap and affordable, like instant water heaters instead of a tank. So it's like tankless water here. So there's a lot of newer technologies and newer things to make the homes not only affordable to get into, but affordable to live in after you get in. Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember I interviewed Tony Ferran, who used to be the city manager of Hurricane, and she was talking about some of the homes they built in Hurricane. It was just a private developer. It wasn't through any government program. And they were smaller, and they got some variances for the lots to be small because the city's like, yeah, we do need more affordable housing, so we'll grant you this. But then they weren't very energy efficient, and she said they had some of the highest utility bills in the whole city. So that's awesome that they're Energy Star certified. I don't think Julie mentioned that, so I'm glad to hear that. Over the life of owning your home, that's a huge deal.
It's nice, too, because they come with both gas and electric. Mm-hmm. So we have both options for dryers, for stoves, for heating and cooling. We have both options.
Well, I think that's all the questions I have. Thank you both so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to the Southern Utah Real Estate Podcast with Jenny Chamberlain. I hope you'll think about subscribing and give the podcast a review if you found it valuable. If you have feedback or ideas to make this podcast better, check out my website, jennychamberlain.com, and leave me a message there.